Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Bible study this morning. It is Saturday, May 12, 2018. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And this morning, our moderator is Dale from Virginia.
Thank you. We'll start this morning with a quote from, it's from Miscellany by Mary Baker Eddy. Quote, with the reading of her textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, Mrs. Eddy insisted that her students make every day a prayerful study of the Bible and obtain the spiritual understanding of its promises. Upon this, she founded the future of her church. And 26 years later, the following appeared in the Methodist Review. Quote, Mrs. Eddy, in her insistence upon the constant daily reading of the Bible and her other writings, has given to her disciples a means of spiritual development which will certainly build such truth as they do gain into the marrow of their characters. The scorn of the gross and sensual and the subordination of merely material to spiritual values, together with the discouragement of care and worry, are all forces that make for righteousness. And they are burned indelibly upon the mind of the neophyte every day through its reading. The intellects of these people are not drugged by scandal, drowned in frivolity, or paralyzed by sentimental fiction. They feed the higher nature through the mind, and I am bound as an observer of them to say in all fairness that the result is already manifest in their faces, their conversation, and their bearing, both in public and private. End quote.
Thank you.
Wonderful. It goes along with what we did our watch on Thursday night, protecting the Bible so that it doesn't become a banned book again. It's also what you all are instructed to do here, and you can all ask yourself if you do just what was mentioned here. For every day a prayerful study of the Bible and the spiritual understanding of its promises. And then also of her, of Mrs. Eddy's work. We can say reading the lesson doesn't count.
It's a good start.
It's a good start, but it should be more than that.
Unless it leads you to more reading.
Yes.
Well, I get a better understanding of the Bible lessons when I go to the Bible and Mrs. Eddy's writings and read around what this section is. It just means so much more to me when I study that way. So sometimes the Bible lesson does bring me right to the Bible itself and to science and health.
Thank you. That's absolutely right. And that is why, you know, for a long time, we did not use full text. We used the books. You have the books in your hand. That way, it's easier to read around it.
Yeah. It's a lot more fun, too, because you can kind of put your mind to see, oh, what was going on then, and it just opens everything up. I find it really fascinating. I really enjoy reading the Bible, and it's so inspiring. Also, just even if you're going through a little problem, just to know it's there and all that the different people, what they've gone through, and just turning to God was the answer, it just gives a feeling of comfort, at least for me.
Beautiful.
Well, that's how it's supposed to be.
Absolutely.
And that's why it's there.
Anyone else on this?
I loved how they referenced that she was what she was teaching was feeding the higher nature.
Yes. Absolutely, yes. And our higher nature needs to be fed.
Rather than be drugged by scandal and drowned in frivolity.
Right.
Or paralyzed by sentimental addiction.
But also, it's an open acknowledgement that we all have this higher mentality, if we would but acknowledge it and feed it and allow it to be nurtured. The whole idea that this came from an apparently an independent source was pretty inspiring too.
Dale, do you have anything to add?
Well, I thought this really spoke to what we read in the lesson this week, that, you know, mortals must put off mortality and reach to spirituality and finding the spiritual message in the Bible. And this is what uplifts us and all mankind. And it's not just reading the words or abiding by the moral law, but seeing the spiritual interpretation and seeing God in everything.
Yeah, and this is how we are putting away our beliefs of mortality for immortality, by the time we spend, as Jim said in his testimony, to make sure you're tithing your time, 2 hours and 24 minutes.
This is how you put on the new man, isn't it? It's kind of hard to put off the old man until you have a new man to put on, right?
Yeah, you'll come bare naked. We leave a void there. Yeah,
a big void. Yeah, an empty vessel gets filled up even worse.
Well, then you just spend all day saying, what would Jesus do, but not really having any idea what he actually would do.
Right. Good point. Okay. Anyone else? Otherwise, we should move on. Hello?
Hello. Dale, are you there?
So, yes. Okay, so the first question, this whole idea of spirituality, this is why I came upon finding out who Nicodemus was and what the Pharisees believed. So the first question is, who was Nicodemus?
Well, he was a Pharisee. He was in the first bit of the story in the Bible, it says he was ruler of the Jews. And then he was also a member of the Sanhedrin, which was a ruling body of the Jews. I believe that was in Jerusalem. And then later, somewhere I was in the process of looking through, when he brought the spices to the cross, that said that he was a rich man because evidently they were pretty expensive and he brought a good quantity with him. There wasn't much... There wasn't a lot of detail on this man as far as who, you know, a biography kind of a thing.
At the very beginning, when he came, he said, "We know that thou art a teacher come from God, for no man can do these miracles that thou doest except God be with him." So he was aware of that.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good point.
Yeah. I also think he was a very smart man, because what he didn't understand, instead of joining all the opposition, at least he went to seek understanding. And I think it's what Solomon advises we should all seek. Instead of being in our corners making judgments, at least he sought understanding. I think that was smart of him. Wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Very good.
They didn't follow that peer pressure. Although it was enough for him to go at night, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, even that, you don't know, might be a wise decision. Why, you know, dare them?
Right. No, you're right. It shows some humility on his part.
And I read he advised the Pharisees and chief priests to investigate and hear before making a judgment concerning Jesus, not make a snap decision.
I thought that when he first went to talk to Jesus, Jesus actually spoke to him for a while. In a manner rebuked him for not knowing some of these things, but he was humble and he was really truly seeking after what the truth was.
So he was wealthy, well educated, but he had a spiritual sense, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he felt something there needed to pursue.
Yes.
You know, when people heard about our church at first, especially when we became independent and were going through the trial, they would hear terrible things about us and take
from,
it
from Boston.
Yeah.
From the BOD.
From the BOD. Well, we were renegades, and many people just took it at face value. We always invited people to come and visit us, but not very many did, and we were grateful for those who did. But they would just take it at face value. They didn't come seeking and interested and trying to get the answers, as Lawrence said, that Nicodemus did, which is a great trait and quality, because this is how prejudice, isn't this how prejudice gets started, and false rumors and all kinds of things, because people don't bother to take the time to find out for themselves. They just believe hearsay.
That's the lazy human mind. Somebody tells them something, they just go along with it because it's the easiest thing to do at the moment, instead of questioning and thinking. And, of course, obviously going to God, what do you say? And following Jesus' command to not judge, you know, there's quite a bit there. Like, use your spiritual sense. You do have a higher nature. And if this issue comes before you, there is a higher nature that can tell you the truth about it.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's, of course, probably just to keep us in the mortal dream so we can just see with our eyes, hear with our ears, and all the other senses, the false senses, and keep us in the wrong view of things, including ourselves. So,
very, very true. So Nicodemus, he had something very good and pure about him, to be seeking Jesus and wanting to find the answers, and realizing, as Fairley read, that he had done these wonderful healings, and knowing there had to be something more. He just wasn't going to accept it at face value, even though that's what all his teaching had been about, and most of the Pharisees were in opposition to Jesus. They're the ones Jesus was constantly having to correct and rebuke. So it did take courage of him to do this. And some people even said in the commentaries that maybe he became a secret disciple of Jesus. He certainly changed around, as we'll find out in the next question.
I think
he must have. Okay, sorry. He must have become that secret disciple, because at the end, when he helps Joseph of Arimathea, who was also a secret disciple, as described.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if he wasn't against them, then he must have been for
them. Right. One or the other.
So he was one of the early Christians.
I thought it was really interesting. I read it from a preacher who was preaching on this section about Nicodemus. And as you were just mentioned, that Jesus saw something in him and knew. Of course, he knew everything. But he challenged him. Here this Nicodemus is coming to him, complimenting him in a sense, and Jesus challenges him right away. I think that was such an interesting thing to do.
Yes. And what did he challenge him with?
Yeah, and how did he challenge him?
With saying you had to be born again by spirit and water.
Mm-hmm.
But he also said, you are, you know, so-called big deal here, and you don't understand, you know. It was just interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, he was challenging his lack of spiritual understanding.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't rebuke him the same way he rebuked a lot of other Pharisees, though. There were a lot of other Pharisees that he called pretty rotten names. Right? Called them liars, hypocrites. I mean, there were some Pharisees that he had no patience for.
Right. So maybe he saw that desire, you know, his desire, and of course the humility, you know, that brought him, at least he came, you know, wanting, so.
Yeah, I thought of his challenging Nicodemus in the form of trying to help him. Teach him.
Yeah.
Come on, guy.
Open your thoughts.
Come on. Get with it here.
Yeah, I really felt for him in that, because I know there's times I talk to my practitioner, or even just time during these classes, that I don't really know what is being said, and I know, okay, I'm just going to have to pray on this and know it will come eventually, but at least he didn't fight back about it, right?
So. I thought it was really neat because he was a member of the Sanhedrin, this ruling body, and yet, and obviously that ruling body was offended by Jesus, not that he ever did anything to them, but what he did challenged their position as being the rulers. This guy Nicodemus had the good sense to say, hey, there's really something here. So when he comes and Jesus tells him to be born again, he knew where he came from, obviously. But he also didn't try to defend himself, that is Jesus, because he knew that this ruling body was out to get him. Because chapter 7 started out that he was not going to walk in Jewry anymore because they sought to kill him. But he obviously read them what was going on there with Nicodemus and gave him a chance, gave him an instruction to be born again. And I thought, my gosh, this is divine love in action. I thought it was quite amazing.
Well, one of the things I read in a commentary reminded me of the way the practitioners at Plainfield work, and it's this is a quote from there, and he's comparing Nicodemus and the man that came to Jesus called Jesus good master, and how Jesus addressed their thought. And the quote was, but they needed to abandon some dangerous prepositions about their state before God, before they were able to understand any further truth, end quote. And I feel like that's really what you have to do for the healing, is challenge some of your preconceived ideas and your wrong beliefs before you even are able to understand anything more.
Very good. Thank you. Very true.
True.
Yeah, Mrs. Eddy tells us what is required is a change of base, doesn't she?
Yes.
That's the change of base that is required.
And the feather bed must be stirred, and most people don't care for it. Some people exit immediately when they're challenged in that way. But thank God for those who don't. So what new birth was Jesus speaking of?
The birth of the Spirit.
Yes.
And what does that mean?
See oneself as the image of infinite good, as the new birth in Miscellaneous talks about.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can read
you
it.
You understand it.
Yeah, you've got to have a new way of looking at yourself, at recognizing who and what you are as a spiritual being, not as the mortal that your mother gave birth to. And a lot of people might actually believe about you. And you might at times believe about yourself.
You know, with Mother's Day tomorrow, everyone has to stay alert because that is one of the most aggressive beliefs. Mrs. Evans used to say it was the worst of all the holidays because it is, most people are believing you're born into matter and you're going to die out of it, and you just need to be alert to that. If you get strange suggestions or other things that come, because in science we're radical, we know that God is our father and mother, we're all brothers and sisters in Christ, and end of story.
You know, I think it's good to remember that it's not really a holiday.
It isn't.
It's a celebration that's made up by mortal mind.
By the card industry.
By the, yeah.
And flowers and candy.
The cards and the flower and the candy industries.
I think it's also one of the, Mrs. Evans is right, because it's one of the relationships that often you hear people have had bad past histories with, and it's good to be aware not to get drawn into the past histories of these inharmonious relationships.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, or even if they appear to be harmonious, it's one of the strongest mortal beliefs.
Yeah, exactly.
And it does need to be overcome, you know, whether you've got good, bad memories or good memories about it.
Or a combination thereof. So, and Mrs. Eddy says that when you enter Christian Science, you've entered your new birth. It should be, anyway. So, and it is, as Gary said earlier, the change of base from a material perspective, a material human sense of things, to the divine, the spiritual, changes everything. And it's, as the article, The New Birth, says, it's not overnight. It's what?
I don't know.
Moment by moment.
Yes. Moments of self.
Self-surrender.
Abnegation.
Yes, self-surrender.
Self-consecration.
I like to think
heaven,
it was
heaven-born hope. I think beautiful. Heaven-born hope.
Yes.
I like to think of it as a journey. As a great journey. Exciting journey. Filled with challenges and opportunities to triumph.
And hope instead of despair, which my previous journey was.
Well, that's, yeah, because it's filled with hope, exactly.
Heaven-born hope is Florence's thing.
Yeah.
Anyone else on this?
I wanted to say that I love what Jesus said, that it's like the wind. You don't see it, but you get to feel it, and you can feel God.
That's wonderful, yes.
Yeah.
And the idea of water was the cleansing and the purifying of the water.
I also felt like Jesus was breaking through those material false beliefs for him, and it was making me think of the daily watch where we peck through our shells, you know, and it takes 10,000 pecks. But when you get it, when you start to see the truth, who we are spiritually, it does make you want to do more pecking, you know. So it just made me think of that. He saw a light in Nicodemus and wanted to encourage that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Yeah, he was always teaching, wasn't he? Wonderful. The way he never lost an opportunity to teach.
And you know, I'm sure he appreciated it. It's like in a classroom when a teacher's talking and everyone just accepts everything that he says, but maybe doesn't understand a word that he's saying. But then you have one student or a few students who ask questions, who want to know more, who want to really understand. That's an important characteristic. And Nicodemus was like that. If he didn't get it, he asked again. And it wasn't in a rude way. It was in a sincere, respectful way. It wasn't just slamming Jesus down, as some did, but it was because he truly wanted to know. And that's how we should all come to the fount, truly wanting to know with humility and being willing to ask questions, even if you feel like you might sound stupid. If you need to know, you need to know, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no such thing as a stupid question.
That's right.
There are stupid answers. But there are no stupid questions.
I like the way Nicodemus said, but how can that be? Like it was just too good to be true almost, you know?
Well, it showed his materiality, materialism, that he didn't see the spiritual message in what Jesus was saying. And that was what Jesus was addressing. Yeah.
There was no condemnation for Nicodemus. At least he got it out and started on the journey instead of just walking away and ending it all. Kept going.
That's it. And also Nicodemus was ready to listen, even though he didn't understand. He knew that Jesus could heal, so therefore he knew there was something about this man that was different. And when you approach this truth, and sometimes calling a practitioner, you've got to have that humility. If you think you know it all and you're trying to tell everybody everything, it doesn't work. I've seen people who have come here that, I don't know, they think they have to lecture to us. No one has to lecture to anyone. Tread carefully and lightly.
Or at least they've maybe taken other courses and then come in to challenge what we have with that instead of, okay, I don't know anything about what you have. Can I understand? Can you help me understand? That's different.
It is very different. If there's a real desire and you're humble and respectful about it, that's great. But when people come and say, you know, I've got things you've got to know, I'm going to tell you a thing or two, that is not great. And some people do it ignorantly. Some people do it maliciously. Some people do it
condescendingly, I think.
Yes.
But everybody who does it full of pride.
Yes, exactly.
There you go.
Full of pride. Yes, full of pride. And they're not even aware of the pride that they are.
That is binding them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's like playing God. Who's going to step into that position to play God, to be the one who's going to manipulate and control everything? He's got it all in control.
So we, many good lessons from this story.
One thing I loved, I read this morning, actually, the man wrote as he was writing about Nicodemus that he wanted to come with the attitude of, yes, Lord, flood my soul with this indwelling spirit and Holy Ghost. I just thought that was really
beautiful, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, despite being a master of Israel, he never lost that feeling of being a student.
So there was a lot of hope for the guy, and Jesus recognized that.
Oh, Dale, do you have something you want to say?
Well, this is all wonderful information. I was struck by one of the commentators said that Nicodemus was Jerusalem's most outstanding Bible teacher. He knew about God, but he didn't know God. And I thought that was kind of strange. And then I read about the Pharisees, that they originated in the 3rd century B.C. in the days preceding the Maccabean Wars, when under Greek domination and the Greek effort to Hellenize the Jews, there was a strong tendency among the Jews to accept Greek culture with its pagan religious customs. And the emphasis of the teaching of the Pharisees was, for the most part, moral, rather than theological. And also, Matthew Henry said the Pharisees placed their religion in external purity and external performances, and it would be a mighty change indeed with them, no less than a new birth to become spiritual. And on the other hand, many a plain, honest, unlearned disciple of Christ, by meditation, experience, prayers, and specially obedience, attains to a more clear, sound, and useful knowledge of the Word of God than some great scholars with all their wit and learning.
Interesting.
There goes the pride again.
Right.
Yeah, there it goes. And I think that's very interesting that they know about God, but they don't know God. Because I hear that so many times, and I hear it from so-called Christian scientists, too. They know about it. They can quote. They've been class taught. They have a whole list of everything they've studied over the years, but they do not know God. And that's a very, very sad state of affairs, and it's one that's partly why we exist. Our God must be real. We need to know Him. The only way you know Him is to obey the precepts with what Parthens wrote about on the forum, doing it, not just reading about it.
And that's what Christianity is all about. Says Eddie says that the beauty of, and this is not a quote, but paraphrase, the beauty of Christianity is in its works, not the words. It's in the demonstration of understanding the truth that is God, rather than talking about it.
And it's a great danger. You know, you can go to divinity school, you can have all these courses, you can know so much, book learning, but then you do not really know God.
Use it or lose it.
That's true. Use it or lose it.
Well, that's a lot on just one question, isn't it?
Tom, did you want to say anything, Tom?
No, just one.
Okay, well. Should move on then.
Well, I think we've covered some of this already, but question number two is, why did he come by night to Jesus?
So the other Jews wouldn't see him, and then he might lose his status. Embarrassment.
So I think it probably was the best time to have a one-on-one with Jesus, as opposed to during the day when he was spending all day healing and talking to the multitudes and everything.
I liked what one person said about he was using discretion in this meeting as well to find out rather than making, you know, making it an obvious thing. Sometimes it we have to go by degrees in to start somewhere. He at least started somewhere, even if he was afraid of somebody finding out he went to talk to Jesus.
Yeah, I read this and this commentary. I'm not sure where I found this, but this is saying a whole lot more to his honor in the Word of God than the majority of the other Pharisees and religious leaders. So he had that spiritual sense in him. He wanted to know more. Even though he came at night, he was drawn to the Christ. And as someone else said earlier, at least he came.
Yeah, he was part of a group that many members didn't really endorse or appreciate what Jesus was doing, and who were threatened by him. I mean, clearly, many of the Pharisees were threatened by Jesus. So he was part of a group where there was a lot of strong feelings against Jesus. So if he didn't share those feelings, he had to be discreet. And in a way, he was emerging gently from his, you know, from his current position and status and way of thinking to wanting to know something better. And recognizing in Jesus that there was something. He probably couldn't approach him in the daylight. Probably would have been impossible.
I think he should.
There would have been a crowd around Jesus at all the all times, pretty much during the day.
Yeah, I look at it like a protection in a way.
Yeah, and if you're doing something contrary to the most of the people around, why say, hey, here I'm going, you know, like that? You just use wisdom, I think, discretion, like it says.
Yeah, it's important always to be wise and use discretion. I have wondered at times, though, there are those who have come to our church and they seem absolutely paranoid if the organization finds out that they're attending our church. You know, they don't want to testify. They don't want to give their name out. So don't be a scaredy cat either. Discretion's important. But I can remember when I worked in the reading room years ago when we were going through the trial, people would call and they would want to remain anonymous. And Mrs. Evans told me I was never to take an anonymous call. If they can't say who they are, then forget about it. Because that's how she was. So, just something.
In a way, that's going against God's nature. I mean, taking a stand is so important.
It is.
Nicodemus did. I mean,
yes,
when
he
they
did
were
in
all.
The end.
Yeah, he said.
Or
even in the middle, he said, wait a second, let's give this man a chance. He wasn't afraid to say it, which means to me that at this time he did use discretion.
That's right.
Humility.
Eventually he came around and he did speak up. So I'm just throwing this in here because it's something to think about. I never think it's a good idea to be afraid of this, afraid of malpractice. Yes, wisdom, yes. And if God is directing, you do whatever you feel is wise to do. But
well, at least Nicodemus didn't wear a mask.
No, he didn't wear a mask.
And we know his name.
Right. We know his name.
We didn't know that other guy that called Jesus the good master. We didn't know his name.
Yeah, that's true. He didn't come anonymously. He gave his name.
He came at night. He just came at night.
Yeah, and there were many good reasons as to why he did that.
There was also a Jewish practice that I came across of going to talk to different rabbis with each other in the night, and that it was actually considered a very recommended practice. So the point that I'm trying to make is that he may not have been totally hidden, because if it was a practice already going on. So, I mean, I think it was wisdom, but there might have been others walking around, so.
Mm-hmm. Probably so.
Sure.
It definitely took courage to do it.
How do we know he wasn't guided by God to do that?
Mm-hmm. Well, ultimately, that's always the answer.
Yes. To me, darkness represents or symbolizes mortal mindedness, and so many of us, when we start out, it's like the first degree of mortal mind, and you know, it's a dark place. But then we see the light, and we are drawn into the light, and you know, then we become more open to that. And but I feel like the beginning might be just a symbol of, you know, the darkness where we are mentally.
That's very good. Yeah. That's true, and important to come out of the darkness into the light, not to remain hiding.
Yeah.
But to come out into the light. It's certainly understandable and perhaps to start out that way, but to stay that way is something else.
Okay. Any other thoughts on night versus day?
Well, in the Jewish law, didn't they have the daytime to do all of their labors and so forth, and then at night would have been a time when that was all done and they could get, you know, talk quietly to one another?
Sure. Dale, did you have any other thoughts on that?
Well, it said that Nicodemus did the good that he could. There were so many corrupts, so he couldn't do all that he would, because many of the Pharisees were just self-righteous and covetous. But I felt that he took this opportunity after they had witnessed Jesus' miracles, his healings, and after he had cleansed the temple. Nicodemus took this opportunity to reach out to him while he was there preaching, because he was going to move on. And Nicodemus had a lot of questions about his saving his soul and his salvation, and Jesus, you know, pointed him to the Spirit, told him that, you know, there can't be any change unless there's a change of the Spirit. So Nicodemus was looking for the truth, and he was reaching out to it.
Are we ready to go to the next? Anyone else?
Okay, well, question three kind of covers, how did Nicodemus change from his first visit with Jesus? And that is what we read actually in the lesson this week, John 3, verses 1 through 12. And then, I don't know if we want to take each one at a time, or then the next is John 7, verses 50 and 51. And finally, John 19, verse 39. See how Nicodemus is. His attitude or his behavior, what we see in him, how it changed.
Bruce, you want to read the first one?
Okay. The context of this is the Pharisees are asking, why didn't you bring this guy in? And because they wanted to charge him. But Nicodemus says, Nicodemus saith unto them, that he that came to Jesus by night, being one of them, doth our law judge any man before it hear him and know what he doeth?
That was great. He stood up for the Christ. That was great. That showed the trueness of his heart. He could have just said nothing, but spoke
and
up.
At the Feast of the Tabernacles, many people were debating about, some people said, this is the Christ. And then someone else says, shall Christ come out of Galilee? And, you know, there was a division among the people.
Yeah, and what was the division?
Well, some wanted to believe in him and others absolutely did not, but there was sort of a debate about it.
Right, and the debate was between spiritual sense and material
yes.
sense.
Yes.
Right. There were some who had the spiritual sense to appreciate what Jesus was saying and doing. And then there were those who were so materialistic that they didn't get it and didn't really want to get it. And a lot of the Pharisees were in the latter group. And Nicodemus happened to be in the former group, and he stood up for it within his own group. That took a lot of courage.
I think it's a beautiful thing here because I liken it to when I used to hesitate to even say I'm a Christian Scientist because I was so unsure of myself, of what it meant, my own understanding, that I wouldn't even say I was a Christian Scientist. But when you gain more understanding and conviction of what it does and what Mrs. Eddy has given the world, then I was able to say, what religion are you? And then I could say, I'm a Christian Scientist.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I know, you know, people have told me more recently when they didn't want to say they were Christian Scientists until they found our website, and then they had some place that they could point them to. And that's wonderful. Certainly felt to a large degree the same way. So, but this is, it shows something very wonderful about Nicodemus. You know, even Peter denied Christ three times, didn't he?
Yes.
It was very courageous in that time to speak out in behalf of him.
And he even pointed out that they were disobeying their own rules.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. It was more along the lines of the way Jesus would answer a question, not specifically answering their question, but answering what they needed to know, I guess, of it. So.
Answering it with another question, turning the tables on them.
I didn't know this, but there is a non-canonical Acts of Pilate from the 4th century work, and it's known as the Gospel of Nicodemus. And when he was there, apparently, according to this, when Pilate was questioning him, and Nicodemus stood up for him then. I didn't know anything about this. I don't know how to find it even yet. I thought it was interesting.
Really? Where did you hear about this?
The Who's Who of the Bible. I have the book right here. And
so is there actually a...
That's what they say. I don't know. I was fascinated by it, but I haven't had a chance about this book.
That would be...
Let's see. Who's the Bible? Well, I can get all the names, because I never heard of a...
that's quite credible, because... If he was a secret disciple like John, Joseph of Arimathea, and maybe some others, maybe they followed him throughout.
Yeah, and if he wrote something down, that would be really interesting.
Yeah, it is on the internet. I did see it. When I saw it, questioned whether it was valid, but they always do that. But
well, maybe he's only a secret disciple because they hid it and it wasn't authorized.
Exactly. Right. It was unauthorized literature. There's a lot of these gospels that were unauthorized literature.
Yeah, Gospel of Dorcas, the Gospel of the others. Mary.
Mary.
Right.
Apparently, there were many.
Yeah.
Okay.
This says something about the power of God that was with Jesus, because apparently the ruling body sent out some people to get him and bring him in. And when they couldn't, the officers asked, "Why didn't you bring him in?" And they said, "Never man spake like this man." And apparently, because of that, they couldn't.
That's great.
Yes, beautiful.
Then the Pharisees said, "Are ye also deceived?"
Yes.
Who were the deceived ones?
Yeah.
They were the...
Well, isn't that how mortal mind works? At its very worst. Who is deceiving whom?
Okay.
You think of the propaganda that we're bombarded with every day. Making right-thinking people look like they're deceived. Doesn't happen today, does it?
And there's no arguing, because those are quite entrenched in what they believe, what they think they see and know. So you can't argue it. You just have to
prove them wrong eventually.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I'll pray that we all see correctly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart. It's an awakening process out of the human sense of things to the divine. That's, again, the new birth. Okay, the next one, Bruce.
And, well, this is after the crucifixion, and it says, "And there came also Nicodemus, which at the first came to Jesus by night, and brought a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 100 pound weight."
I thought it was amazing that he did this. Because I thought it was a beautiful thing that he gave a place for Jesus to be in a very quiet and just such loving and tenderness that they were caring for his needs in that time, and they put him in that quiet, cared-for location, and then he did this right in the middle of the most hot time. And what courage that took.
Well, he had to be deeply, deeply moved by his experience with Jesus, and then confronting his own Pharisees, and then to see Jesus crucified for absolutely no good reason. He had to feel the evil at work.
I think he was loving what Christ Jesus stood for.
Absolutely.
It mentions Joseph of Arimathea was a disciple of Jesus, but secretly for fear of the Jews.
Yes.
I like this question because there's a citation in Science and Health that says progress is born of experience. And with these three citations in John, you can see the progress that Nicodemus is making throughout this time. From, being in secret, then defending to Christ, while he still wasn't revealing that he was a disciple, but he was truly defending him, and then to be at the cross at a really hot time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it showed great courage, great understanding. Certainly showed, for the next question, he totally changed from his perhaps doubt to be quite a disciple of the Christ. Couldn't have done that if he weren't.
Yeah, this was a time when all the apostles fled. And the account that I read contrasts Peter with Nicodemus, and it mentions how Peter started out, you know, really fast with his race for spirit, and then he bit the dust, is what the term said. And then Nicodemus was timid and started out slowly, one step at a time, and then he picked up strength. And this is, you know, what he did, how he showed his respect to Jesus.
Good, that's a very good point. Mm-hmm. You know, the story of the tortoise and the hare, and the tortoise that wins the race, slow but sure. And, of course, Peter came around and became a wonderful disciple. But
he did.
They
took different paths.
Yes.
But they all came to a good, spot. Nicodemus eventually saw the Spirit. He eventually recognized. He was pursuing truth, wasn't he? He wanted to know what was true. And he obviously found it to a very large extent.
I read that Nicodemus was deprived of office and banished from Jerusalem by hostile Jews, and then baptized by Peter and John. And I believe it was on Biblos, I'm not exactly sure which commentary.
And they have writings of a Nicodemus around that time that lost everything after this too, all his wealth. Mm-hmm. Which they feel might have been because he finally took this stand.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't care, I'm sure. He had gained what is most important.
Yeah. And loss is gain. Not quite as dramatic as the conversion of Saul to Paul, but similar.
Yeah.
And who knows how many others saw the light and followed, whether secretly or openly. I mean, it was tough to follow openly because you were going to get hunted down and killed.
That's a very beautiful story.
Well, I thank everyone for all the input. I had read that about the myrrh and aloes, 100 Roman pounds, an excessive amount that Nicodemus brought for a royal burial. And I read in one commentary, we enter the kingdom by recognizing who Jesus is, the Son of God, and look to him in faith. The master evangelist, Jesus, had done his work. He had brought a Bible teacher into the kingdom of God.
Wow. That's beautiful.
Very good. Yeah.
Put that on the forum.
That's
a good.
Good
closing. Thank you, Dale.
Thank you,
Dale.
Thank you,
Dale.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dale.